Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we will be covering Season 2, Episode 10, titled The Red Angel. And I have a feeling that, yet again, we're going to be hearing a lot of that.
hopefully
you guys love it as much as we do. But yeah. Before we get started talking about that episode, we're going to talk about the previous episode. So we're going to open hailing frequencies. All right. Our first bit of feedback is from a fellow Canadian, Andrew. And he hails out of Edmonton, Canada. So I'll read this one, I guess.
Okay.
Hi, guys. This is Andrew from Edmonton, Canada. I'm probably too late, but hope this gets to you. Well, it did. Just we have to play it in the next episode. But that's okay. And we want to encourage people. You know, we know we have a short deadline. If you've got feedback, just go ahead, send it. We will play it the following episode. It's all good. I loved 75% of this episode. In fact, if I gave it a review, I would give it 10 out of 10 Memories Archive for the first three quarters of an episode. I would grade it an F for the last quarter of the show. Now, hold on a second there, Andrew. You are mixing your grades here. Okay. So it's 10 out of 10 and then F. So what is an F? Is it a 4? Is it a 3? Is it a 0? What is it?
Could be a 5.
Could be a 5.
I mean, technically 50% is failing.
That's right.
60% is a D.
Right.
70% is a C. 80%. You get where I'm going with
yep,
this.
I do. Okay. and the grading system is, or at least it used to be, different in Canada. An A in Canada, at least when I went to school, was an 80.
Oh.
Which I know in the United States is a B.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost a C, honestly. I mean, you're on the cusp of being a C student.
Yeah, I think the curve is different, though. That's how it's graded.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not counting a curve. That's, I mean, it's 90 to 100 is an A, 80 to 89 is a B, et cetera. So, I mean, without any kind of curve.
Yeah.
What it would be with a curve, I guess, would depend on what the students in the class are getting.
When I was a math major at the University of Waterloo, little backstory on me, I used to have a saying. It was, get to know the bell curve, let the bell curve be your friend. And of course,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
We'll do our best to stay on point because God knows we don't want another 2.5 hour episode.
Marathon.
Which is edited 2.5 hours. Believe me, it was much longer. Anyway, I was telling Ruthie before we started recording, I think that was probably the best episode that Ruthie and I have done together in almost 5 years of podcasting together.
And I told Brian that's because we recorded in the morning.
And guess what? We are not recording in the morning this time. All right. Well, anyway, good thoughts on the episode. I really liked the backstory on Irium. The archiving / deleting of memories was very interesting and gave us an easily accessible backstory on an underused character. Random thought, was Irium her name before the accident? If you unscramble the letters, it comes out to I, Maria. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And plot-wise, it gave us and Tilly a way to investigate what happened to Irium. And love the ending where her last memory is the one on the beach with her husband that her good friend Tilly sent to her. Yeah, that was a really good.
Yeah.
Really good. Some people won't like the Spock-Michael fights / discussions, etc. I'm okay with it, as it will eventually get us to TOS Spock in about 7 years. I will have to say, just fast forwarding a little bit, we got a really nice one in this episode, and I love that discussion, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Spock/Stamets. I liked how the unemotional Vulcan gave Stamets a different way of thinking about Culber and their breakup. Stamets has been thinking it's all about him, and Spock said, look at it from your husband's perspective. Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, and I think this episode kind of indicates it. A ship's counselor would be very welcome on this ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be funny if, like, Cornwell just, like, you know, gives up her admiral. Just, you know, becomes the first ship's counselor on.
Oh, God.
That would be funny. Anyway.
Yeah.
Jonathan Frakes directing again shows that he understands the Star Trek universe and how to work in unique camera angles and shots. Yeah, and I think it's like he's talked about this in the interviews, how it's, you know, it's kind of a combination of modern camera techniques with the Star Trek that he's used to. So he's able to bring a whole new perspective based on the way that he knows how to direct now versus, say, when he directed First Contact and Insurrection, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, other TV episodes. Like, he's basically taking what he's learned since then and applying it to Discovery, which has a much more advanced design aesthetic. And by the way, I really notice this when I compare and contrast and can watch on the same night the Orville with Discovery, because, like we were talking about last week, the Orville looks just like an updated, you know, next gen or Voyager, and it doesn't look all that much different. The graphics are a little different. The, you know, the resolutions are different, but it looks so similar to that kind of show. And Star Trek Discovery looks a lot more like a Game of Thrones or The Expanse or any, like, really advanced genre TV. So, but I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Now for the rants/questions. First of all, they find several bodies just floating around in the control center. Just a few minutes before, Commander Nan goes to turn on gravity and life support. Neither Burnham or Arium thinks for one split second to tell Nan not to turn on the gravity. Like, for example, Burnham would say, Nan, wait! And that leads to rant number two. Several frozen dead bodies that have died from unknown causes drop to the ground and shatter, releasing bodily fluids and possibly whatever killed them into the air. This seems like a good time to remove our helmets and start breathing all of that contaminated air. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he says, what the heck hell is wrong with Michael? Your shipmate/friend/coworker is literally gasping for breath a couple of steps away from you, and you literally ignored her. All you had to do was reach over and place her breathing apparatus back on her cheek. Yeah, I mentioned this last week. I definitely agree with that one.
And I mentioned she was kind of busy.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't agree on that point.
Nope.
Next point. Why has no one seen the video of Spock killing the doctors? That is something that would have leaked much sooner. Yeah, I've often thought of that. It's like, what's the equivalent of YouTube, Facebook in the 23rd century? From walking through Spock memories, we know it's a fake. So when we have the, and now I have to play the clip.
It's a fake.
So we know when we have the unemotional, logical Admiral Pitar, it was instantly obvious that she was a fake, as well as created by the AI of control. So you were instantly, you thought that it was a fake. I didn't think it was a fake at first. So good on you for picking that up right away. Random thought, this was the first that Anson Mount or the writers made a mistake. After seeing the video, he says, that's not the Spock I know. Pike, after years of friendship/service, would have said, that's not Spock. Three less words, but a lot more emotion.
I don't know if I really agree with that or know what he's talking about.
Mm.
If I think I know what he's talking about, I don't know that I agree, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that last point, I don't know if I completely agree either, because to me that sounds pretty much the same. And when the menagerie goes on, they had served together for 11 years and whatever it is. So at this point, they haven't been together anywhere near that. Like, I don't even think it's been half. Because if it's 2257, I think they served together until 2265, roughly, maybe 2264. So anyway, it's less than half that time. So he's known him for maybe 3 or 4 years, not 11. So anyway, that's the point I'm trying to make. I think they're logically equivalent. So not to throw logic at you, but I don't really have a problem with them. All right, so let's move on to the next one. We got LT from NC.
All right. LT from NC says, since I am listening to last week's podcast right after watching Red Angel, Ruthie talked about Non's breathers. According to Memory Alpha, the Barzan atmosphere has toxic to human chemicals that they need to function. So the pipes on her face feed those compounds into her system so she can function in a nominally Class M atmosphere. I took getting it ripped off as more of a shock to her system, which might explain the immobility after getting chucked down the hall by Arium. The TNG Barzan character had a little different appliance that fit closer to the face.
Yeah, and I wonder if that is like what they're trying to say there, is that in 100 years' time, the apparatus was a little less clumsy, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, so, yeah, because I especially noticed that this episode, that the apparatus, which I honestly hadn't noticed until now, like it had like a little place where you could like grab it. How convenient.
That's funny. Yeah, well, I mean, if I call it a breather, that's because that's what she said. That's what Arium said. You need that to breathe.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a breather. I mean, it is, it's like, and it's similar to what the Benzites use.
Uh-huh.
They were another TNG species that had like this, it almost looked like dry ice or something, some kind of gas that they needed to breathe as well. Just much different.
Yeah. Then LT goes on to say, I didn't mention the end credits with the memory fade out and the surf sounds, but that was such an emotional hit. Then this week with the opening of the funeral and the prep work they did. Giorgio, it's her married name, if you trust Memory Alpha. And the black stuff on her face is blood. Barzani blood is back. Black. Did someone dispute that? I don't remember either of
us. I think I asked the question about what was all that black on her face, but
oh,
that's a good observation. And that makes sense, actually.
Then I must not have heard you say that, because I would have said, it's blood.
I should have known. Regarding that, I looked it up since you brought up Giorgio, and it says, according to Memory Alpha, her ex-husband is named Nikos Giorgio, that her name is taken from her marriage, and I guess she kept it. Now, obviously, she marries the same, if that's true, she married the same guy in both universes, because she has that name in both universes. That's fine. However, it is worth noting that it came from a novel. It did not come from show canon. Now, we know that the novelists work very closely with Discovery. The writers and comic books and all that have a really good relationship with the show. And I know that they share ideas and that. So they're working to try to keep stuff very close. But they also, if the writers of the show come up with a better idea, they end up working with it. And it seems like in this case, although that story about Giorgio's, you know, name and how she got the name Giorgio, knowing that she's Chinese Malaysian, which is actually the same as Michelle Yeoh, the novel that it comes from, Desperate Hours, which was the first of the Discovery novels, a lot of that is now wrong. It's apocryphal, because in that novel, it highlights a relationship between Spock and Burnham that we know from the show. It was nothing like that. They had been estranged. And in the novel, they hadn't been estranged. So now that's not the same thing, but that just throws to question the whole novel, in my opinion. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's just my point.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention from LT?
No, I guess not.
Okay. There's another couple of small ones. I'll read those. Avelino, my friend Avelino, he says, I think this was my favorite episode of the whole series so far. I guess he would agree with you on that 9.999999. Anyway, he says, and there have been a lot of really good ones. Yes, indeed, there have been.
Yeah, that's true.
And then John correctly answers the question. He says, Ruthie fell asleep during our roundtable before the season started. So he correctly answered the challenge about when did she last fall asleep on an episode. That was episode 25, the roundtable. Then he says, girl was talking and then she was gone. At least that's what I'm guessing. So I'm going to say that, yes, you are correct. But unfortunately, I have to disqualify you because you were there. So unfortunately, no one wins this little quiz because John answered it and I have to disqualify him.
And that's the only time that I've ever fallen asleep. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And that was also going to be the answer. But, you know, it's like, John, you could have let somebody else that wasn't on the episode. That's no fun.
No fair. Yeah. Cheated. Inside knowledge.
I told him that too. I said, cheater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Next is our friend, James.
Okay. James says, best episode of the cast yet, and I'm not even done with it. Aw, thanks. We could talk about this stuff for days and never run out of things to say. That being said, a couple things stood out to me. Ruthie, you mentioned Cardassians would use mines. I'm wondering if you were thinking of DS9 when they mined the opening of the wormhole. That was, in fact, the Federation compromising that principle again to defend the station against the impending Dominion invasion.
Wow.
And I replied, I was not referring to any specific time that they used mines, just that the Cardassians are the type to be shady and do shady stuff and that they would.
Yeah.
Like the Cardassians, the Romulans, the other shady races. I can't think of any others off the top of my head now.
The Dominion.
Yeah, yeah, them too. Those jerks. Yeah. Anyway, then James goes on to tell us about some more of his military experience. And he has a very interesting story that he survived. And you can read that in the Facebook group if you want to. Everybody go to facebook.com/groups/Star Trek Discovery Podcast.
Yes. So, okay. And we're trying to, you know, make sure we don't have a 3-hour
episode. Because it's kind of a long story, but it's really cool. And basically he says that, yes, people are trained to let someone die in the military, which I don't doubt at all.
I don't doubt it either.
Those are decisions that I never have to make in my line of work. So, yay. And then he says, almost forgot, someone brought up the apprehension that the Federation has with the AI. What strikes me, though, is if this is the case, how did Data get allowed into the Academy? He is basically a really advanced sentient AI. I know there was some prejudice against him in Measure of a Man, but other than that, he seemed pretty accepted. I don't know. I think, to me, it feels kind of different.
I think so, too.
But I don't know that they necessarily have a prejudice against AI. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I think Data had been, like, a part of Starfleet, I think, and a part of Federation for a number of years, like decades, I believe, before we see him on Enterprise. So, you know, he probably, you know, he's Lieutenant Commander, so he had a long time to prove himself. That's
right.
Take anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Well, I think it's time to get to our episode. Season 2, episode 10, which is titled The Red Angel, written by a couple of names that I didn't recognize. So Chris Silvestri and Anthony Merrinville. And he has been with Star Trek Discovery from the beginning, it seems, or close to the beginning, as a researcher. So, and a production assistant. So I guess this might be his first writing credit. Interesting. Oh, no, he has other writing credits now. I look at it. He's written for Monk and The Secret Life of Orange Traffic Cone Assassins. That's a short. But I guess, so he's a new writer, essentially, just with one story credit for Monk. And
yeah, Monk's not a new show, though.
No, no. It was actually back in, looked like 2008. When I look up Chris Silvestri in IMDb, he is also miscellaneous crew. So these were a couple of writer's assistant and researchers for the show. So I guess they've been kind of behind the scenes. So, and prior to that, he was a writer's assistant on Hannibal. So that's the answer. So, and right. Directed by Hanel M. Culpepper, and she's worth a note because she is directing the Picard series first two episodes. So that's really cool. So we'll be seeing a lot of her. I don't know if she is attached to the series otherwise, but I know that she'll be directing the first two episodes. She also directed season one, episode 12, which was a very big episode from last season, Vaulting Ambition. And that was, of course, the one where Burnham had to eat the ganglia and Lorca was finally revealed as being from the Mirror Universe. So anyway, and the description from CBS.com is as follows. Burnham is stunned when she learns her ties to Section 31 run deeper than she ever fathomed.
Yep.
Armed with the identity of the Red Angel, the USS Discovery goes to work on its most critical mission to date.
Most critical.
And could you say possibly...
It's a trap!
Yep.
All right. And I didn't find any Spot the 47s this episode, other than the recurring one that we see under Pike's chair.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, Ruthie, what would you give the Red Angel as a rating?
I am going to give this episode a 9.75.
Okay, 9.75.
Arbitrarily.
All right, well, I was really having a hard time figuring out what I was going to give this episode. I guess I'm going to give it a 9.6. Have you considered medication?
Ha ha. That's funny.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start?
All righty. Mark Olivier says, I give this episode 9.2 out of 10 time crystals.
All right. James gives it 7.25. Did you just call me poppies? That was funny.
That was funny. Oh, that was funny. Yep. Good stuff. Ken from Chicago says 7 out of 10 hours of info dumping, expositional talking. Hashtag so much talking. Any more info dumping and hashtag Doctor Who Stephen Moffat would have to sue for copyright infringement. That said, I enjoyed Burnham's talks with Spock and Tyler. I don't understand why. What's wrong with talking? Sometimes you need a little exposition. I mean, every single episode can't be go, go, go.
Yeah. And there was some trippy stuff in this one.
Yeah.
And things that we didn't know. But
and some go, go, go.
Yes. LT from NC, he liked it considerably more than Ken did. He gave it a 9.9, uncomfortable conversations with Giorgio. Indeed. Well, I had opted for poked out Section 31 eyeballs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Totally saw that coming.
Yeah, I wondered, like, okay, why does a Section 31 vessel have a periscope? I know it wasn't a periscope, but...
I don't know, but as soon as he put his eyeball next to that thing, I was like, ooh, he's gonna get stabbed in the eye!
Yeah.
He's going to get stabbed in the eye. And then he got stabbed in the eye.
Stabbed in the eyes.
I was like, oh, man. Saw that coming. Yep. Saw that coming a mile away.
All right. I think you're next.
Okay. Rick from Cleveland says, I rate it 9 out of 10 right hooks. That's 5 for Burnham's mom and 4 for dad.
Why does her dad get less?
because mom gets more.
Yeah. I guess mom gets... guess it because she's a time traveler. Mike in Cleveland, fellow Clevelander. I wonder if both of you are on east side or west side. I think Mike is on east side. It's a whole thing in Cleveland. I would give this episode 7.5 out of 10. Klingon High Council members that would have voted to eliminate human existence given the opportunity.
No offense.
No offense. Yeah.
None taken.
None taken.
I don't know why he thought that would be offensive. Everyone knows it's the truth.
Yep.
That was funny, though.
All right. So now we have some listener yeses.
Yes.
First is from James. He's got a few here. He's got 4. He says, the conference room table in the cold open. I think they beamed it straight out of Sam Crow's clubhouse. That's, of course, Sons of Anarchy reference for those who don't get that. I wouldn't have gotten that, actually. I have seen some Sons of Anarchy, but it's been quite a while, and I didn't get too far. Arium has quickly become Discovery's Tasha Yar. Her part in the show was small, but the writers, I think, do a great job of making her matter to fans in such a short time. Yeah, I would agree with that for the most part. I just would have liked to have seen it, you know, interspersed in the season. I think it would have been more effective. What just happened?
Deuterium, we can use it to create a plasma reactor to power up our phase discriminators. And then, snap, we have our mouse.
You are savvier than he was.
You do know that he's gay, right?
Don't be so binary. In my universe... he was pansexual, and we had DEFCON level fun together. And you too, Poppy.
Did you just call me Poppy? Well, in my universe, and pretty much any universe I can possibly imagine, I'm gay, and so is he.
Of course you are. I'm glad we all see what's right in front of us. And now, if you'll excuse me, I need to talk to Captain Pike about setting a course for Esoph 4.
What just happened?
That was so classic.
Amazing.
What just happened?
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. The scene with Culber, Stamets, Tilly, and Giorgio was phenomenally played out. You could cut the tension with a knife and each of them experiencing a different type. And yeah, that was so, like, and I wondered, like, how much of that was Giorgio just, like, manipulating them and how much of it was actually true?
Who knows, man? A little from column A, a little from column B.
I think so, too. A little from both columns. Then last one is Total Recall. While Michael was suffocating, it reminded me of the end of that movie when Arnold and the lady were thrown out onto Mars' surface before atmosphere gets terraformed.
Yeah.
I had not thought of that, scene. But...
I did. I always think of that when I hear people suffocating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the eyeballs bugging out and crap, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I remember Cohagen in that movie... edited that scene that because when I saw it in the theater, it basically his whole head exploded. And I never saw that again. Even when it played on video, they took that out. I guess it was too graphic.
Huh. Well, all right then. All right. Next is from Rick from Cleveland. A yes on Tilly, both in the conference room and in engineering. What just happened here? Yeah, that was awesome. A huge yes on Giorgio this week. Manipulative as ever. The scene in engineering with Stamets and Poppy. I can't stop laughing. I know.
Yep.
Oh, that was so funny.
Yeah.
Did you just call me Poppy?
Yeah, that was classic.
Gosh.
That was so classic.
Good. That was one of mine as well.
Yeah.
Giorgio making a pass at both Paul and Hugh.
I know. And why does it not surprise me that they, and obviously
a DEFCON level and fun.
Yeah. Pansexual. I just mean, cause we've something about the Mirror Universe. Like if you recall, on DS9 there, Kira, and she was the same way. It was like so hypersexual, and it's like, I don't really know why that is, but
is there something in the air there, or is it the water?
I don't know. I don't
pheromones, know. Pheromones, lots of pheromones.
Seems like everyone is having sex with everyone else. All right.
Oh my goodness.
Our last bit of yeses comes from another Clevelander, Mike, and he says Michael Burnham not being the actual Red Angel. Yeah. I have to say that was a whole confusing thing, because if she had been the Red Angel, it would be like, huh? It was more than just a paradox. It just seemed like just a crazy thing to do. You're going to go back in time to save yourself. It just was. So I was actually glad that it totally appears that Control planted the fact that it was Burnham. It was actually Burnham's mom. So, you know.
Either that or they had similar enough brain scans. I don't know.
Well, I thought about that, but one thing I picked up on in a late watch, I certainly didn't pick up on it right away, but when that whole topic came up in that first meeting with the Section 31 guys and Discovery guys, mm-hmm. Well, I guess the Enterprise guys too, for that matter. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in that meeting, when that comes up, Giorgio says, "Are you absolutely sure it was you?" And the reaction of Giorgio was kind of like, that doesn't make any sense that it's her, because she must have known, and I think we're going to find this out next episode, that Section 31 figured that it was probably Burnham's mom doing it. So they figured that it made no sense that it was Burnham. That's a prediction I'm making. I don't have any evidence, but in looking at the scene a couple more times, I picked up on that I think that they thought it was going to be Burnham's mom, not Burnham. Hmm. They just didn't want to say that, but it fits all the everything that we see after that fact. He's got two more things here. He says, the entire memorial service for Arium. Yeah, I thought that was really good. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed it as well. If you can enjoy a memorial service. Burnham, Spock, apology moment. Yeah, I really like that too. That was good. Uh-huh. All right, so it's now time for our yeses. Ruthie, what do you have?
Wrote down, knowledge bomb of the Red Angel's identity in the cold open. I thought, wow, that's really cool. They just totally told us right at the beginning instead of making us wait the entire episode. But then, but still, I thought that was cool in the beginning. Yep, that's right. Of course, the Giorgio making a pass at the two guys.
That was something. It was definitely something.
It's hilarious, though. Yeah. Tilly's watching it like, what's going on? And I wrote down Sonequa Martin Green. She is so good. Yeah. I mean, just watching her face. She goes from despair and sadness to hurt to disbelief to anger to cold rage in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
Or minutes at most. But it was just all right there on her face. And watching it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Just so good. And that kiss, they still love each other, but it's complicated.
Yeah.
There's still feelings, but she's like, I didn't want that to be our last conversation. And he's like, don't say that. It's not going to be our last conversation.
Yeah.
And then they kiss, and it was like, yes.
I don't have anything specific written down for yeses, but one thing that I wanted to mention, I guess, was Cornwell in this episode. Mm-hmm. It was a couple of things that I really liked about Cornwell in this episode. One, of course, was the scene with Culber. I thought it was kind of funny. Maybe that Cornwell should retire from the Admiralty and become the first ship's counselor. Because I think she did some really good quickie counseling there. And I also got a kick out of Cornwell when they're having that meeting with the Discovery people and the Section 31 people. And Leland mentions about like the plan that he has. And she says, I'm cringing already. Mm-hmm. I love that. But, you know, clearly, you know, she has had, she has worked with them in the past. And it seemed like maybe she had Starfleet intelligence under her, but I think she's kind of held them at a distance. And to me, yes, they are on our side, but man, they're shady. Mm-hmm. They are very shady. Although I will also say another point I don't have written down, but it's a good yes. The Giorgio Burnham relationship. And
yeah,
that was really, really good. And this for the first time, I really feel like Giorgio has kind of turned the corner, at least as far as Burnham is concerned. Like, she is really looking out for Burnham. And I mentioned it earlier than I was going to, but the episode of The Ready Room this week features Sinequa Martin Green. Mm-hmm. So, and I think she just had her birthday. Was that today?
I don't know.
Yes. Oh, yesterday. Actually, she had her birthday yesterday. So March 21st, the day that the episode came out. And as we're recording this on March 22nd, today is the 88th birthday of Shatner.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so I really feel like Giorgio, at least with respect to Burnham, she's really looking out for her. And
yeah,
I think it's kind of cool because Sinequa Martin Green mentioned on the Ready Room today how they're each not the other's person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mirror universe.
It's not her daughter and it's not her captain, but yet they are finding a way to, you know, have that kind of bond still. And I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
It also gives me some positive feelings about the Section 31 series, because I was really wondering how they were going to like deal with this mirror universe emperor, you know. But at the same time, there was a couple of things that she said where she was talking about how totalitarian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, she said this in front of Spock and Pike, and I don't think they know yet that she's from the mirror universe. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I like her. Like, you can kind of see, I don't want to necessarily say chinks in her armor, but the, you know, she's got the feels a little bit for Michael. And she doesn't always come right out and say it, but she has reactions to things and stuff that
yeah.
is kind of like, you can tell that she really does care about what happens to her, even though she has this all like, oh, I'm hard ass and I don't care and I'm blah, blah, blah. I'm a deposed emperor, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, stuff. I think, yeah, she's doing great. Michelle Yeoh, so awesome.
She's definitely doing great.
Yeah. I was going to say also, I don't think necessarily that what Admiral Cornwell was doing was necessarily like quickie therapy. I mean, she's been on the ship for a little while.
Right, right.
So she's probably made some observations already, because it's not like you can really turn that people watching part of your brain off, you know?
Right. Yeah, I just meant that it was a very short session. That's
oh, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think she came up with that off the cuff. I think it was probably right.
I would agree.
Here's what I've seen.
Yeah, and she also made it obvious to, like, the things that Culber's feeling. She made it obvious to him that she says, well, so, like, yeah, of course you're going to feel this way. Mm-hmm. And it makes total sense that he would feel very disconnected from, you know, that life. Because technically, that is not the same stuff. He's not made of the same star stuff. Mm-hmm. So he is a different Culber, but he is the same at the same time. Which I was thinking about it. And it's like, I'm going to try not to think about that too much, because it's like, how did they get all the knowledge?
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a sci-fi thing. So I'll just suspend my disbelief.
Yes. Hand wave, hand wave.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to our nose.
No!
Okay. First is from James. He says, major plot hole. How does Spock correlate a pattern to the Red Angel appearances to Michael being in danger when it only happened 2 of 3 times? She wasn't in danger in the church during World War III to have transported it to Terra Elysium unless there was like an ancestor there leading to her birth. They seem to just conveniently leave it out. This entire premise makes Terra Elysium and that entire episode useless. And how did the church get transported in the first place? Michael's mom must be pretty strong to pick it up and drag it through the wormhole. This is really bothersome and sounds like lazy writing. Well, I will say the church getting transported, that's a point that I hadn't thought of, but I have to wonder about that myself. But the whole thing about Terra Elysium, I'm wondering if it's still going to fit in somehow in a later episode. And I do have a little bit of, and she was in danger essentially on the planet, but later, right? Because everything's going to happen there and the asteroids are going to like descend on the planet and radiation and whatever. But then again, she wouldn't have been in danger if they hadn't gone there in the first place. So,
details.
Yeah.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Although he mentions it in his yeses, he also mentions the what just happened scene again. Not for how it played out, but for why Culber would be looking for Cornwell there. It seemed a little forced in. You know what? I have to agree with that. I had thought so too, that it did seem a little forced there, but it was a minor thing to me. Last one he has is, how can Michael and her mother share the exact same bioneural thingamadoo signature? We know that parents and children share some of the DNA, but it's never 100%. I don't get it if this signature is a bit more vague than DNA. Culber didn't seem to give it that feeling. Yeah, I mean, and he said something like, it couldn't be randomized or couldn't, like, if it was artificially created, it he would be able to spot it.
Yeah, it would be too perfect, I think, is what he said or something.
Yeah, but I wonder if, the control had already, like, developed beyond what Culber could have detected. Because, what I'm thinking is happened there is that, you know, they planted – it was something that Cornwell said, is that she said something like, you can expect that because it was planted there from control, they may have just been trying to take them off the course. And it seems like by the end of the episode, you know, with what happens to Leland, it seems like, yeah, that was their intention. Their intention was to get the real Red Angel there and do whatever. But it was all I think control was manipulating them, thinking that it was Burnham, but it actually wasn't Burnham. It was Burnham's mom. But it was simulated, much like Spock's deaths were simulated. And, you know, I had a thought about this too. I should have mentioned this earlier when we were talking about the episode, but those three people that died, they must have actually died, right? Like, control must have gone in there and killed them somehow. Like,
it's kind of easy to do if you're on a space station. Just take away the oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Die.
Yeah.
Just turn off all life support, you know? Dead.
But that's what I was thinking. What must have happened there is that, like, those three people actually did die, but it was at the hands of control. And either control, like, created a hologram or what will eventually become the holodeck. And
that's exactly what I thought happened.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, anything is possible here with that. So, all right. Next, we have one more.
Mike from Cleveland says, Burnham and Tyler making out. Spock's physical movements look way, way too robotic to me. In my opinion, the actor moved more like an android, not a Vulcan. Culber walking around the ship in a two-piece suit.
All right. That's it for our listener nose. Ruthie, what do you have for nose?
I don't have anything. Shocking, I know.
Yes, very shocking. Not that shocking.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
There, as far as nose, the only thing I can think of that it kind of really annoyed me, there were a lot of lens flares in this episode.
Oh, really?
I really noticed it, especially in the first, several minutes of the episode. It's just like lens flares all over the place. Too much like the JJ verse, I thought. So
I did not notice that.
That would be my main no. And I may come up with some as we go into further discussion. But let's move on to our favorite segment.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Now, before we get to that, though, you could also...
Me, I need to talk to Captain Pike about setting a course for Esau 4.
What just happened?
Commander.
Yes, so...
What just happened?
So, you could also call this segment for this episode only, What Just Happened? Mm-hmm. All right.
That was pretty awesome.
James is first, and actually, I have a whole section on one of the Hold Your Horses because multiple people brought it up, and that is on the time crystals. So James says, time crystals? These things are talked about like, oh yeah, we all know about those things. The ever elusive time crystal is a hot commodity. There's like no explanation of what it is and why everyone seems to have some knowledge of it. That's good points.
Yeah.
Rick from Cleveland also brings it up. He says, here's a hold your horses for the episode, a big one. Time crystals? Really? A more elegant MacGuffin for time travel? Suliban technology. Interesting. Remember those guys from Enterprise? Yes, I do.
I do too.
Section 31 certainly would. Otherwise, great episode. That's a great point, Rick. Yeah, if they got a hold of Suliban's technology, and for that matter, like Suliban had the ability to squeeze themselves into corridors and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Not really time travel, but they had some interesting things. I feel like in the TNG area, this would have been had a much more like technobabble name, like something with more technobabble flair. But they used time crystals in Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. That's what Mudd called it, a time crystal. So I guess they figured to keep that name, but it's lame, in my opinion. I would expect something like the trilithium crystal or something. That
Not to be confused with the dilithium crystals.
The tetralithium. They have tetralithium.
Oh, goodness. Yep.
Yep. All right. You want to give the other two from James?
Okay. James also says, that device that stabs Leland in the eye to get the ship more power. To quote Tilly again, what just happened? Ha ha. Shinjo transporter parts repurposed. Did anyone else think those containment dishes looked like 100% like the dishes from the Shinzo? I don't know.
Yes. I actually noticed this too, that those dishes, they look very much like the transporters on the Shinjo, that like circular dishy thing.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
No, I still don't know what you're talking about.
I tend to think that it was a cost-saving thing. They just used that.
Like they did in the that one episode in that one place
with yes. those people. Yes, on the Ba'ul ship or compound or whatever that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, do you have any Hold Your Horses?
Not that I can think of. I mean, I almost had one, but then it was kind of resolved. So, no.
I thought it was interesting that Spock would go against a direct order from his captain. Although I get it in the end, and I don't think he'll be disciplined in the end, but still interesting.
I didn't think it was. I mean, it's completely in his character to do so. He did so on the Menagerie. So
that's a great point.
He's all about the greater good, the needs of the many, blah blah.
Yeah.
Stuff.
It did seem like okay, they're going to kill her just to get the Red Angel to show up. It did seem like quite a foolhardy thing to do. I guess it worked, but.
Well, yeah. I had written down, it seems like this is not going to work because if Michael's the Red Angel, Michael knows the plan. The Red Angel knows the plan. So basically Michael knows that they're ready to save her. So it's not really like she's in danger.
So it'll be like Red Angel chicken.
Yeah, or something. I mean, I was like, well, because initially I thought, okay, that plan can never work because she won't show up because she knows that the other people will save her. But then, like, oh, wait, Michael knows that Spock would let her die because it wouldn't work otherwise. So then it would work. And then it was like, oh, okay, it will work because even though Michael knows that the plan or whatever, she also knows that Spock would absolutely let her die. So then, and also, you know, I mean, both versions of Michael know this, future Michael and current Michael know that Spock, Spock would let her die. But then it turns out that she wasn't the Red Angel anyway.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, completely blow that theory out of the water because better than the grandfather paradox, it's her mother.
Yeah.
And mom trumps grandfather paradox. So.
Yep.
Because mom would come no matter what.
Yeah.
Even if she knew it was a trap, she would still come.
Yeah.
She didn't know it was a trap, though, because the Red Angel and Michael are not the same person. So the Red Angel did not know about the trap. Oh, time travel, man. Makes my head hurt.
She did not know.
It's a trap.
That's right. She did not know that.
All right. So that's it for our Hold Your Horses. So let's open the Hailing Frequencies again.
Alrighty.
All right, so now is a voicemail from our good friend, Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 10. First off, I want to come back to last week's podcast. Initially, I only sent in a 57 seconds feedback as a kind of joke and on purpose that it was very short. And actually, I do a lot of work on these screenshots. So I thought, okay, my feedback will be visual. Have a look at the blog post. And in the beginning, Brian didn't get it, but what the joke was. And that was partly because I hadn't sent in at that moment the most of my screenshots. So I thought, okay, when Brian is not liking it and understanding it, what am I doing here? So I sent in a proper second one. And you guys really tricked me because I didn't expect that you would put in both. And what I surely didn't expect is that you put all my screenshots in the blog post. I'm very much honored by that. So thank you very much, Brian. Still a lot of work for you to put them all in. And now the listeners know a little bit how we work. So I make screenshots of the episode, normally around 150, but for the last two episodes, already more than 200. And I select about 40 or 50. So Lucy and Brian can choose from that. And at this time, you can see the whole selection. It became a kind of storyboard now of the whole episode. Okay, about episode 10. Brian said somewhere in the previous podcast.
This is my roundabout way of basically saying that I don't think she is ready for the chair.
Well, if there was somebody ready for the chair, although it was another chair than Brian meant, but if somebody was ready for the chair, this chair, it was Burnham. Okay, I had a little problems with this episode, and it's mainly because the first half hour is a lot of talking. Of course, it started with a very nice, well, not nice, but impressive and nicely filmed and scene of the memorial for Arium, including the singing of Saru, So that was very nice. But then as soon as the data of that Tilly gave about the fact that in the Daedalus file there was Michael Burnham's biometrics, from that onward, it became a lot of talking and analyzing, first with the group around the sickbay bed, and then later with the people from Section 31, and then Michael talking to Giorgio in the corridor, and then Michael talking to Leland after Saru talked first to him, and then, okay, then it got a bit more exciting when, well, Burnham heard the story about her parents and got very angry with Leland. And then there was the talking between Burnham and Spock, and now then again talking about their mousetrap, their plan. And then after that, they got to this, I don't know actually what it was. Was it the planet or whatever, with a toxic atmosphere? Then there is talking between Burnham and Tyler. And then it really starts to get a little bit of action. I like the episodes more if there is a little action in between. And although Leland got floored, there was not so much action. Then we got more action, and after that, it got a little confusing because Red Angel wasn't some Burnham traveling back from the future, but it was Michael's mother. They assumed, because the data of Burnham were in this Daedalus file, they assumed she was the angel, but it was only a file. It was nowhere said that these biometric data were of the Red Angel. It was just in this file. And I think her mother, having her biometrics, although from a child age, put them in that file as a marker to take care that they would know that it is real. Okay, that was all for now. OG, more than 4 minutes. What will Rusie say?
Oh, what the frick, Fred.
Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Oh,
that's funny. Fred, here you go. Thank you so much, Fred, for everything you're doing with podcasts. You've become a good friend and a good supporter of this podcast, and we both thank you wholeheartedly. All right, so
I guess we don't necessarily know that was a Red Angel brain scan. It was just a brain scan, do we? I mean, kind of seems like, I don't really know where they pulled that from, I guess. I don't know. But I liked all of the exposition, to be honest. I mean, I don't ever, I mean, there are probably times I do mind exposition, but I don't usually mind exposition because, like I said, sometimes you got to have talky-talky. Can't all be
talky-talky.
All go all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, how else are you going to learn some of this stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
There's some of this that, I mean, it's like you can't really teach this by or explain this by example. There has to be like, oh, we found this file, and or we analyzed the data or whatever. You have to have some of this kind of stuff as exposition.
Yep.
It's better if the exposition is, you know, more staggered out a little bit. But we got a whole bunch of exposition in this episode, and yet we still got action, and I think that's a good thing. So. Anything else you want to bring up? One thing I'll bring up. Yeah, I thought we made it clear that we were going to play them both. So sorry, Fred. But like I say, I think we were able to make something out of it. You know, laughing with you.
Teasing,
yes. Laughing with you, not at you. And I think that's... I mean, that first voicemail, I have to say, Fred, it was weird. But, and also, well, you know, sometimes weird is good.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah. And I said, because I was looking at it pretty late in the day, just before we were going to record. And it's like, yeah, it looks like we don't have any voicemails today. So, Fred. You know, I know we told you 4 minutes, but you can go a little longer if you want. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yep.
All right, so let's move to the next bit of discussion, shall we? Next is, we got a couple of short ones here. Erend says, okay, I did not see that coming. I assume that was, he was talking about mom, but I don't know. Marc Olivier says, love the episode, but don't like the time crystal explanation. Time crystal? This is not Harry Potter.
That was a time turner.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I would have much rather had, like, you know, some crystal with, or like you can call it a time crystal with chromaton particles, or, you know,
some kind of lithium crystal.
Yeah. Emanating a tachyon beam or whatever. Whatever. Tech to tech. But time crystal is kind of, I don't know, generic. But I do have some thoughts about the time crystal going forward, which I will talk about at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Good. Since it could be spoilery, so I'm going to hold it off to the end.
Alrighty.
Next.
Next, we have James, and James says, overall, an exciting episode with a swerve ending besides the major plot hole and some WTF moments.
I'm sorry, I just thought of the Orville.
What specifically?
When he said WT, did you watch the episode?
Yeah, I did. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah, he said wireless.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah,
completely. Oh my gosh.
Had no idea what WTF actually meant. And did you notice that was played by Tim Russ?
Tim Russ, yes! Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, it's Tim Russ!
Tuvok, in other words, just in case you guys don't know.
And it is cool to love both the Orville and Discovery. I don't have a lot of tolerance for people that are hating one over the other. I mean, yeah. It's okay if you don't like one over the other, but you don't have to, like, chastise people for, you know, and there are people that do that.
You don't have to choose.
You don't have to choose.
You can do both.
They're both good. They're both good. I like Discovery more, but, you know, yeah. I mean, last night's episode was pretty good. I wouldn't say it was great. It certainly wasn't as good as their last Orville episode, but it was good.
Yeah. But it was still, I was like, oh, Tim Russ! I was super excited about that. But yeah, that WTF, that was funny. Anyway, I feel like it could have been done better writing-wise to explain some things. Brian, I think you said last week that Frakes was originally slated to direct. I can't remember, but if so, I wonder if he chose to opt for episode 9 instead because of the sloppy points of this one. Mm. I'm being a little harsh on this episode because so much of this season has been superb, and while the episode isn't necessarily bad, to me it feels rushed and kind of sloppily thrown in. Mm. Hopefully I just missed something that will change my mind on it, but IDK. Help me understand, guys! I don't know what to tell you. I don't mind exposition, again, like I've said, so I don't know.
Wireless telecommunications facility.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it was.
Oh my gosh, that was hysterical.
Yeah, that was funny. And like we said, it's okay to love them both. I mean, we're not podcasting on the Orville. If we ever do a Patreon or something like that, maybe we'll do it. But otherwise, we're not, you know, this isn't an Orville podcast, but we still love the show. It's cool.
And it comes on the same night. And so you get to watch them both. It's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good when you can compare and contrast, but I kind of wish that they weren't on the same night, but I watched them both last night.
Anyway, I don't know about, I mean, I guess, if you don't feel like the exposition was done well, I can see how that would be frustrating. But I personally didn't think that it was poorly done, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe I think people sometimes get frustrated with exposition, and I don't know why.
I don't know either. I mean, you got to talk sometimes.
You have to.
Like I said, this can't be go, go, go all the time. I don't know. So.
I don't think – I told James this. Today, like what you said there, James, I don't think you're necessarily wrong. You know, I don't think anything you said there was wrong. I think that last week was a better episode. Well, it was a better episode, except for the one thing I didn't like about the episode, the T-Dog thing. I would have appreciated it more if they had built up Arium's character over the season and not bring it up, you know, last minute kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's where, but the episode itself I thought was really good.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I don't know that I can even say that I thought that the episode last week was better. I mean, I liked it more, but I don't know that I could necessarily say that it was better. It was different.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's not everybody's cup of tea. I get that, but I don't understand it.
All right. LT from NC is next. And he first says, "So Frakes likes the spin shots, and this week's director likes the whole crawl and drop in shots. And the cutaway shot they did during that Service of Non was just a fraction too short." So I guess the close up of Non, or near close up, whatever, the shot of Non, you're saying, was a little too short? Maybe, I guess. I think it was kind of made up by the scene with Burnham later. That's just me, though. "But she nailed the look of, I feel very uncomfortable at the funeral of someone I just had to space."
Yeah.
Then he says, "Was that actually Doug Jones singing?" I believe it was. And of course, he did sing during the episode of Carpool Karaoke from a few weeks back. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have fun.
"Did you notice the replacement for Arium on the bridge was, I think, the actress who played Arium before?"
Yes.
Yes, it was. And in fact, I had this in my notes and I took it out when I noticed that LT, you said it. So, yeah, that was Sarah Minich, and she is playing Lieutenant Nielsen. And I haven't heard the story about this, but I'm assuming that she said, you know, "Guys, I can't take the makeup," or something. And they just said, "Okay, well, let's find another actress that'll do it, and you know, we'll keep you in the show."
Yeah.
Maybe she said, like, "Guys, you know, I'd really like to stay with the show." So, you know, they got a role for her. You know, I think that's cool. And she is playing a role on the bridge that needed to be played. So, you know,
yeah,
I think it works.
That's cool.
Good for her for staying on the show and not having to wear that awful makeup, because I imagine it was probably terrible.
Yeah.
"Without going on like a stereotypical IT employed Star Trek fan." That's funny. Sounds like me. "I will go back to my assertion from last week that Starfleet needs to have a better system admin."
Oh my gosh.
Definitely. As also a stereotypical IT employed Star Trek fan. And everyone at my job knows I'm a big Star Trek fan. Yep. I have three monitors, right? And each monitor changes every minute to a different Star Trek. And I've got shots from like all of the shows. Anyway, when they said that bit about scanning the Section 31 ships and not finding anything, I was thinking they should have firewalled them off and done something a little more invasive or drastic. I was looking at control like a Trojan virus, and Section 31 ran control. Those are great points. I mean,
it's true.
It seems like this stuff was written by someone without an IT background, I have to admit.
Or any computer knowledge, really.
Yeah. Cornwell and Leland in the transporter room. I really didn't like her character as much last season, but they have been writing her better this go around. That scene was telling for me because it shows that Giorgio is setting herself up as a new head of Section 31. Interesting. Really? I didn't get that vibe, but... Leland is starting to be a little guilty. Yeah, well, he definitely has a lot to be guilty about. And for that matter, did he die? I mean, like, what happened to him? Is he now infected by control?
A needle to the brain means death.
That would seem to be the case.
He did.
I know on Walking Dead, if a zombie got stabbed in the eye, that would kill him. So I do like the way that Pike has taken a very fatherly tone with Tilly. When she plowed in the conference room and he spoke to her, it sounded like, to me, the King Ezekiel, Jerry.
Jerry!
Jerry!
Oh, gosh.
Jerry. The whole aforementioned uncomfortable conversation with Giorgio. The looks on Stamets and Cobra's faces and just the whole freaky cougar dominatrix black leather Empress Philippa thing going on. Yeah.
Yep.
And she was like slinking around. Yes! Like she does.
Stalking like a cat.
She was very cat-like. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And poor two gay guys going, I don't know what's happening here. What do I do?
I know. And I got a kick out of like Colbert going, you know, he's gay, right?
Oh, sure. Like that doesn't matter at all.
And then she turns around at the end and says, you know, thank you for pointing out the obvious or something like that. So it's like, okay, I guess she knew that he was gay. They were both gay, but it is still classic. That was a great scene all the way around. And the icing on the cake with what just happened.
Yep.
The exchange between Spock and Michael when he strapped her in the chair. Just loved it because we saw a flicker of our Spock and that maybe Sarek's kids can get along to get it done. Okay, Ruthie, you mentioned snakes, and I'll admit I have poked in the eyeballs phobia. So when Leland put his head in the retina reader, I scrunched up. I just wonder if next week we'll get Leland in dark glasses or if he's officially dead now.
I think he's officially dead now.
Which, you know, would be interesting because I fully had expected him to be part of that Section 31 series, but
yeah.
I guess not.
I squinched up too. I was like, oh, he's going to get poked in the eye. It's going to poke him in the eye. He's going to get poked in the eye.
Oh, my eye. Anyway.
That's pretty much what I was thinking.
And finally, I did not see them dropping Mother Burnham out of the Red Angel suit. Okay, we did find that out that Project Daedalus was her parents' project, but I just didn't think they'd pull this one out of the bag. When we heard that her parents were killed, I always assumed they found bodies.
Yeah.
That is a valid assumption to make. I certainly did.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, usually when you say someone is dead, it's because you found a body.
Doesn't necessarily mean, by the way, that they didn't die. Like, so... You never know. I mean, that could be explained away. They already knew that they were going to die, so they just let it happen or something. I don't know. Of course, it seems like whatever the death of her mother was a pretty traumatic event based on the way that Burnham tells it.
Yeah.
Last thing he says, I wasn't going to mention it, but the control/computer issues reminded me why Adama didn't like computer-controlled systems in the Galactica reboot.
Yeah.
You already had the Skynet crossover conversation, so yes.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, but I like the Battlestar Galactica reference. Uh-huh. That's cool. All the talk about a system admin, I would have to agree. Again, I think some of this is inherited from, you know, Star Trek of 53 years ago and all the, you know, discs and things that we saw. But so I expect that we'll probably have less network computers because of this. That's my take. That's the thought that I have, that it kind of explains away, and it probably explains why Pike's able to say no holograms anywhere. Later on when he's fleet captain.
Yep.
So that's it for that one. Thank you so much, LT. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. That was super long.
Yes, it was.
But good.
It was good. Long but good.
All right. Next, we have Rick from Cleveland. He says, there's so much packed into this episode. Moving on, I think Giorgio knows more about the Red Angel than she is sharing, and that the angel herself is not what or who she appears. Not exactly, anyway. I say this for two reasons, and it took me three viewings to pick up on this. In the conference room, when Burnham tells her and Leland that the angel is her future self, and they have proof, there is a very brief look of determined disbelief on her face. Later in the episode, Giorgio refers to the angel as that thing with disgust. Now, Giorgio this season shows an affection for Burnham that challenges the idea that a future Burnham would be a thing. Maybe I am reading too much into it, but when has anything been as it seems on Discovery? Spock's animosity toward Burnham has certainly changed. The relationship has the feel of the Spock and McCoy banter from TOS, filled with snarky yet well-reasoned logic. Quite satisfying. I loved so much about this episode. Culber finding understanding in Cornwell, Tilly being Tilly, Nan's scene with Burnham, and of course the memorial service. I am excited to get what looked like Klingons next week and finally some explanation for how they are tied to the Red Angel. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure we're going to see Laurel. I don't know if we'll see her next week, but I'm almost positive we are going to see Laurel either this week or next week.
I think I was still furiously scribbling notes when the next episode stuff was showing.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Next is Mike from Cleveland. Or does he say in Cleveland? I think he says Mike in Cleveland. Which is kind of funny because I know you're a truck driver, so you're usually not in Cleveland.
Haha, that's funny.
All right. He says, there were a lot of great moments in this episode that really make the hour fly past, and very interesting, but it kind of reminds me of Game of Thrones Beyond the Wall episode. Mm. Do you remember what one that was?
Well, if he's talking about what I think he's talking about, yes.
Yes, I remember that episode. I had to look it up, though. And yes, I get what you're saying about that one. It had a very like otherworldly kind of tone to it. I will not spoil that episode for listeners that haven't watched Game of Thrones. It is a great episode, kind of heartbreaking at the same time. Amazing TV, but not so sure the storyline is going to stand up. As usual, every Giorgio moment is gold. I would agree. Mm-hmm. If you people aren't getting that there is some kind of biological connection between Giorgio and Burnham, we are watching two different shows. Yeah, okay, so this is an interesting point he brings up. By the way, I thought you guys' opposition to Burnham being Giorgio's daughter based off looks was weird. First, trust me, an Asian woman can have a non-traditional looking child. I have a close personal relationship with three such people, my own children. Second, I can take you down to the Acadian parts of Louisiana, where my mom and dad's own Black/Cajun/Creole roots are from, and introduce you the rainbow coalition of blood relatives I have, and you'll learn to never trust your lying eyes when it comes to race. Okay, I stand corrected. I have heard some other people say similar kind of things. I would say that that's a little bit of my ignorance coming in place, because I'm kind of a white man. And I have a French Canadian mother and a French Canadian father. And the only thing different about those two is they came from different parts of Ontario. So that's me. Probably means somewhere in there I might have some other, you know, like Native American, or in Canada, they call it First Nations. I may have some of that DNA. I've never been tested to know. Who knows? So I'll take what you say on advisement, and didn't mean any offense by it. Normally, usually when I see two parents, I usually see a resemblance to the kid looks somewhat like both parents. So that's just what I mean. But, you know, I get it. Didn't mean any offense to anybody. I'm all in on Michael and Spock being brother and sister now. The show has really shown us the complexity of their relationship. The only thing we need now to complete the circle is for Amanda to show up and engage with him. We know from canon Sarah can't, I believe, but I could be wrong. No, actually, you are correct. When they meet in Journey to Babel, they have not seen each other. Obviously, that's incorrect. Sarek certainly saw Spock, but they didn't interact. But it had been many, many years. So that's a true statement there. I believe, but I could be wrong. Maybe with Mama Burnham showing up, Amanda will also. Interesting. I don't know. That's possible. Why does every TV show make our female hero interesting and try to make them more interesting by putting her in some kind of romantic relationship? That's a good question. That is an awful TV trope that I have seen, you know, like where, what do they call it? There's
The Bechdel test, I think.
Yes.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where a main character, they pass that test if the two female main characters
don't talk about a man. Yeah. He says they almost ruined Supergirl putting her in relationships, and they will ruin Michael Burnham if they put her with Tyler again. And just to be clear, not only do I not want her in a heterosexual relationship, I don't want her in a gay relationship either. I want to see the story of her Starfleet career. I want to see her interactions with her crewmates. I want to see her crazy problem-solving skills. I want to see her mentoring of Tilly. I want to see her badass fighting skills. And I want to see how her relationship with Spock, Amanda, and Sarek goes. I don't need or want a boyfriend/girlfriend for Burnham. That last part is implied. Then he says, I think had Burnham and Tyler not kissed, I would have given this episode a 9 out of 10. So that he docked 1.5 points just because they kissed.
Man, don't be a relationship hater.
I would have to agree to disagree with you. I don't mind it. Now, if Mike, it all became about Burnham's relationships, then I would have a problem with it. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but it's not.
It's not. So
it just happens to be an incidental part of her life.
Right. So I don't have any problem with it. I would have a problem with it if it dominated her character, and it never has.
And I don't think it ever will based on what happened in the first season. And I was very particular about this and how she was perfectly capable of being like, no, you need to step back and I can't do this right now, and not just automatically forgiving him, because that's what he was asking for. But she did woman up and was like, no, I need time away from you right now.
Yeah.
And they've had that time. They've had a lot of time. So I feel like there's absolutely nothing wrong with having them come back together after having all this space. To me, it's a completely natural thing to have happen because, hey, man, in real life, people have relationships. Sorry. And it is the Bechdel test where two women talk about something other than a man, talk to each other.
So who came up with it?
Bechdel.
Yeah, obviously.
Used to be known as, or also known as the Bechdel-Wallace test. So I'm imagining it's two people, one named Bechdel and one named Wallace.
And Wallace said, screw this, I'm out of here.
The test is named after American cartoonist Alison Bechdel, whose comic strip, Dykes to Watch Out For, the test first appeared in 1985. Bechdel credited the idea to her friend Liz Wallace and the writings of Virginia Woolf. After the test became more widely discussed in the 2000s, a number of variants and tests inspired by it emerged. There you go. Huh. Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge on the internet.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's Reddit.
Well, anyway, my take on it is we agree to disagree. I don't have a problem with it, but I get where you're coming from. I would agree if it started to become her focus, then it's not cool.
Yeah. I mean, I understand some people don't like relationship stuff or whatever, and that's fine, but I don't think that they're trying to make her more interesting because she's in a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
So if I understand what you're saying, I don't think that they are making her more interesting by having her in a relationship. And besides, one kiss does not a relationship make.
Right.
It was an emotional moment for her. She thought she was going to die.
That was my point, is she was going to die. And, you know, something.
She didn't want that last conversation to be her last conversation with him.
Right. So I didn't have a problem with it. I respect the fact that you did. It's similar in The Walking Dead. So many people don't want to have Daryl get into a relationship with anybody. For example, I've always thought that he needs one, but, that's the other show. So,
yeah.
But it's a similar kind of thing. It's like people that never wanted Scully and Mulder to get together.
Get together, yeah.
So, I get it.
I think, yeah, I mean, I get it too, but I just don't think that that's what's happening here, honestly. I never wanted Carol and Daryl to get together. I always just wanted them to be friends because I think it's perfectly normal and completely understandable for a man and a woman to have a close friendship.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to always turn into romance. So,
right. I do not have any other notes.
No.
I wasn't able to write much for this episode just because I was really busy today, but I haven't really found anything else that I wanted to mention that hasn't been mentioned already. Listeners covered things quite well. But what do you have?
I was really glad that...
I just thought of something.
Of course you did. I was really glad that Michael was not upset with Nan, that she was able to recognize the necessity of the action and not be mad at her, even though, technically speaking, Nan killed her friend. Yeah. I thought I was very, very pleased with that. I think to me that shows a level of maturity that I am glad that Michael has. And I really liked when Giorgio said, it's often our best intentions that cause us to do most harm, especially to those we care for.
So very true.
Yeah, so true. Like, I'm not going to tell you this secret because I'm trying to protect you. Yeah. I mean, I think every single book I read has a character who says that. Like, really? I just want to scream at them sometimes. I am not a child. I don't need you to protect me like that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah. But I thought that was very, very astute.
It was.
She made that comment. And I think, honestly, that's a more astute statement than we might necessarily attribute to Giorgio. You know, like, we don't really necessarily expect her to have those kinds of deep thoughts or whatever. So,
well, I think it shows that there is a depth there that,
she's not just surface.
Yeah. And it really makes it, that point about the best of intentions makes you wonder about, is that how the whole mirror universe, I shouldn't say how it came to be, but how things turned out so differently. Yeah. Just from, the best of intentions that, you know, and like, one thing led to another, which led to another, that turned the universe into a very cutthroat,
very different place,
very sexual place, as was shown here. But, you know, things like the agonizers and, you know, it's very, very, very conquest driven empire we see.
Totalitarian.
Yeah, just makes you wonder how that was just one little thing. Like somebody, okay, the following thing is not to be offensive to anyone's race, religion, or creed. So let's say in the mirror universe, Herod killed Jesus. Okay, so when they were searching for the son of God or whatever, the king, Herod, when they were searching, Herod found Jesus and killed him. So he never grew up and he never became the Jesus that, you know.
Right. So instead of escaping to Egypt, he didn't escape.
He didn't escape. Yeah. So maybe that one little thing, because it seems like the Terran Empire came out of the Roman Empire just based on the way it's designed. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, that was a thing. I don't know. But it could be just like one little thing that could have set that universe off into just a whole complete other mess.
Yeah.
It's worth thinking about. What else you got?
I talked about this a little bit last week, but I think it's shown once again that self-sacrifice is always easier for the selfless than sacrificing someone else, because, you know, Michael is certainly willing to risk herself because she's self-sacrificing.
Those foxies
do selfless.
Totally be able to sacrifice her too.
Well, yeah, but that's for a different reason.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
That's the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one. And again, going back to the scene with the many, many emotions on her face, her entire life has been shaped by this one thought. I killed my parents, basically. It's my fault that they're dead.
And it's kind of funny because a lot of her adult life is shaped by the fact that she thought that she was rejected from the Vulcan Expeditionary Group. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that at all. Sarek had to make a choice between her and Spock, and he chose Spock. And she spent years thinking that she failed. And then you get this second thing in this season where so much of her life was, centered around this thought that she was the reason for her parents' death. And I have to think that that's a huge weight off of her. But at the same time, I totally understand why she clocked Leland twice.
Oh, yeah. But I think it's more than that, though. I mean, honestly, I think she has spent the majority of her life trying to make up for that.
Yes.
For what she probably views as a selfish act.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to be 180.
Yeah, good point.
And I'm going to be selfless from now on as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And because to her, I wanted to see this star go supernova. So that's the reason why we were there. So because I was selfish, I killed my parents, basically. Yeah. So now I'm going to spend the rest of my life making up for it and being as selfless and self-sacrificing as I possibly can so that I don't ever get put in that situation again or I don't ever have to deal with whatever, which is why she's always taking responsibility for things that aren't her responsibility or aren't her fault or she can't have any impact on whatsoever or anything like that. Also, I believe why she couldn't pull the plug on Arium because that would be another instance of
defeat.
Yeah. And not of sacrificing someone else.
Right.
For even though it's a righteous cause, so to speak.
I mean, those actions explain why she rescued Giorgio,
mm-hmm.
and brought her across into the Prime universe. Because she was motivated to save.
Correct that wrong.
Yeah. Because she figured, and rightly so, I believe, had she not done that, Giorgio would have died most certainly in maybe moments, maybe minutes, maybe days. But at some point, the forces that were gathering against her would have killed her. So, so I think that it does. The whole thing, it explains even what Spock said earlier in the episode, which was really funny, by the way, when he said that in the room and she's kind of like, thanks for sharing.
Spock? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was totally a brother-sister moment that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it was. It was very brother-sister. And I thought that was just spot on.
Like he's sharing embarrassing stories from her childhood, but it wasn't really that much of an embarrassing story.
I think someone had mentioned that it could have been like Burnham embarrassing him on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was very brother-sister rivalry kind of thing. I like that. What else do you have?
I think I pretty much talked about everything. I wasn't really sure why they wanted to trap the Red Angel, though.
I think that they wanted to trap the Red Angel to find out what the Red Angel knew. I think that was because Leland's plan, I guess, was to capture the Red Angel and make it work for them. That's what he said. So I think that was the plan, that they were going to intercept the Red Angel, let the Red Angel know what was going on or whatever, and have them drop baseball stats from the 1980s or something. Back to the Future 2 reference.
Mm-hmm.
Biff and his
Biff,
good old Biff.
Yep.
Anyway, that's the only thing that I can think of right now. I really liked, there was a really interesting shot of Discovery. I think it was at the start, it was like the opening shot of Act 2, where we see Discovery from a certain, like backward angle, and it was coming in and focusing on Discovery, but it also wasn't like directly behind. It was just an angle of Discovery that I've never seen before, and I really liked it. So just wanted to mention that. But I think I saw a different director of cinematography this episode. So I don't know if that was the lens flares reason for that. But yeah, like I said, definite lens flares or lens flare-ish type stuff at the beginning of the episode. And with that, I think we are going to move on to our shipwide announcements. I mentioned earlier the Ready Room is featuring Sinequa Martin Green. Great little 22-ish minutes episode of that this week. So check that out. And yesterday, as we mentioned, was her birthday. Okay, so we have a spoiler alert, which if you've been paying attention, you really shouldn't find this spoilery, but some people did. So Deadline.com reported earlier this week that Anson Mount and Rebecca Romijn are set to leave Star Trek Discovery at the end of the season, we have learned. According to sources close to the series, both Hell on Wheels alum Mount and Romijn had strictly one-year deals. The duo had been contracted only for season two arcs as part of a plan to sync up Discovery with the original Star Trek lore by the end of the new series, second season, heading into season three. Well, the first question I've got with this is we haven't really seen Rebecca Romijn at all. So I don't know if she's going to.
She was in like one little bit.
One scene. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, and that's all we saw of her. So I don't know if she's going to be. Yeah, she's going to be coming up more prominently later on in the season, but it really hasn't been much of her. I would be curious about Ethan Peck, of course, but I'm not surprised about this, and I don't think anyone should be. We got one reaction from Twitter. Barnabas Frid on Twitter says, now Anson Mount is out for next season. No mention of giving Pike his own show, but lo and behold, give Picard a show? Not happy.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's not hate on Picard just because Anson Mount doesn't have his own show.
Yeah. And, you know, I know some people like think it's ridiculous for Patrick Stewart to have a show. We are not two of them, though.
Yeah, those people are crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see a Picard show, definitely. I would love to see that character again. And I am very interested to see what is coming for that. I believe it's only a few weeks out now before they start shooting, and I'm sure we'll probably get more cast announcements about it. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen anything come by since the last one from last week, the Evan Evagora. But so two things I found with this article. Ethan Peck not mentioned at all in the article, which I thought was kind of strange. And okay, so they had a contract, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that precludes them from signing another contract for another show. And
unless they have some kind of exclusivity clause.
Yeah. But like I say, I mean, when I was watching the Ready Room today, I even put on the Star Trek Discovery Facebook page while I was watching that video. I'm like, CBS, we want a Pike series. Make it so. So. I want Pike to go. I talked about it practically every episode. So I understand that he's probably not going to be the captain of Discovery next season. He could still be a recurring character. He could be a recurring character or even a lead character on the Section 31 series, for all we know. But I would love to see another five-year mission series of the 5 year prior to Kirk. And I think it would be fantastic. And I'm really hoping they're going to see the demand of that. I'm sure they've already, the fan reaction to Anson Mount's Pike. And for that matter, Ethan Peck's Spock, which I'm really pleasantly surprised the reaction that in general he's gotten from fans. I expected some people not to be able to accept it, but he's been fantastic and the show has been fantastic, and I think it's great. I think he's been very well accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, so I would not worry too much because I think they're probably going to leave it open so that he could come back. But I really, really think CBS, they want to expand the franchise. And to me, a Pike series is something at the end of this season people are going to be clamoring for. So I'm really hoping it's going to happen. Next little tiny story is I mentioned the director of this episode, Hanel M. Culpepper, is directing the first two episodes of the Picard series. And when she was interviewed this week, she said that Star Trek Picard is not the title of the series. I guess somewhere it had mentioned her with Star Trek Picard, like something that she had put in place. I don't know if it was her website or what. I didn't read it close enough to know. But she said, no, that's just a placeholder. So I imagine that it'll actually show the correct name once it's finally been released, which I don't know. I don't know if they're going to wait until San Diego Comic-Con for that or if it'll probably be released before. I wouldn't be surprised if it's released when they start shooting.
Yeah. Who knows?
All right. And we'll just move on. And Ruthie, why don't you tell people how to contact us?
To submit your feedback, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can call us at 304-837-2278. You can email us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Or you can post in our designated episode discussion thread in our Facebook group, which, as I mentioned before, is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. We're also on Twitter at StarTrekGSM, and you can find us in the TV Time app behind and leave us feedback there by commenting on the post there, the TV Time app.
Great way you can support us is by subscribing to us in the podcast client of choice. If you use Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple, which will take you to all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. While you're there looking us up, give us a rating or review. That would really help other people find us and give us some exposure in the sea of other Star Trek and Star Trek Discovery podcasts. There's a lot of them. And with that, we would like to thank Kathy for her wonderful iTunes Canada review.
Yeah.
5-star says, great disco podcast is the title. Great little review. I'm not going to read it, but thank you so much, Kathy, for your review. Share and retweet us when we post about the episode and on Facebook, on Twitter, what have you. If you go to facebook.com/GoldenSpiralMedia, you will see the episodes posted there, and those you can share. The Facebook group is closed, so you can't share those, but tell two friends about our Facebook group and our podcast, and we will grow. Other ways you can support us until we get a Patreon of our own someday, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support to support the network. And we already mentioned it, but we got two more episodes left this season for The Walking Dead. By the time you hear this, our episode 96, almost to 100. For season 9, episode 14, Scars, will be out by the time you hear this. So, next episode for this podcast, we'll be covering season 2, episode 11 of Star Trek Discovery, titled Perpetual Infinity. Just sounds very shocking and horrifying. We don't know who's written, directed, or description, but we can assume that it probably has to do with Mom, the time traveler. Okay, so I had two thoughts, and that was this. So there's this time crystal. Could that be Bud's time crystal that we see in Discovery? The same time crystal? Did Didn't the Klingons have some unusual crystals on their on Kronos? Makes me wonder about that too. But the other thing I'm wondering, wasn't there also some weird crystals on Tyr Elysium? Maybe that's why they go there? Maybe the time crystal is from there. Ooh.
Maybe.
I just have to get my ratio of shock horrors in. Anyway, until next time, I'm Brian.
I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.